Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Lincoln Riley took a wide receiver from Colorado, a running back from Stanford, and now Travis Dye, who's just tuning in, Oregon running back, headed to USC through the transfer portal. Here to talk about it, John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News. Are you going to USC too? Did he get you?
It depends on what they can offer me for an NIL deal.
How much do you think that's in play here with Dye? Is it NIL? Is it him going home? What is it?
I think it is probably a combination of four things. One, just maybe wanting to change the scenery, having been at Eugene for a while and now a new staff that he's not used to. Going home, NIL deals the Trojans could offer him, and maybe just a chance to play for Lincoln Riley. I mean, I think that there's a certain level of attractiveness for a lot of kids to play for a coach who's been in the playoffs three times and has, coached multiple Heisman winners.
It's interesting to watch, a running back from Stanford, a wide receiver from Colorado, now a running back from Oregon. Is there logic to this, or is it just coincidental that Lincoln Riley is weakening the conference by getting better himself?
Oh, I think that's part of their plan, for sure. If you can weaken a rival, and Oregon, you can envision Travis Dye starting in the backfield for USC in the Pac-12 championship game against Oregon. I mean, that's not a ridiculous scenario to play out the next season. So I'm sure that part of that is strategic in terms of weakening a division or cross-division rivals.
John Wilner with us, San Jose Mercury News. I originally thought to myself, it's a tougher rebuild at USC than people are making it, but with Mario Cristobal leaving Oregon and looking at Washington starting over with Kalen DeBoer, I'm kind of wondering if maybe this is playing into the hands of Lincoln Riley a little bit.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they were going to not be, they were going to improve quickly in his first year. There was no doubt about that. They still have got a couple of pieces left, right? They got to find a quarterback. They probably have some work to do on defense. I don't think there's much question about that. And I'm not sure about the offensive line yet, but there's easily a scenario where you can see them, either winning the South or coming real close to winning the South this coming season. And then by 2023, if he can fortify his lines of scrimmage, they're going after a playoff bid. You could, with the transfer portal at a place like USC, you can definitely reload quickly.
Wilner, I think it's the portal and some of the other things going on in college athletics are making it challenging to be a fan. But I also understand, like, Mario Cristobal did what was best for him. How do I get mad at Travis Dye for doing what's best for him? What do you make of just college athletics in general and what we're seeing?
I don't think you can get mad if you're a fan. I mean, if the player says, "I'm staying," and then he turns around and leaves, that's one thing. But, it's hard. It's like the NFL, right? Or an NBA. It's free agency. And these guys have multiple reasons to go from one school to another, whether it's to be closer to family or just to get a change of scenery, which you can't blame somebody for, or if it's a business deal under NIL, playing time. I mean, all those things come in, factor into it, and you really kind of have to detach yourself if you're a fan from rooting for the player to just root for the uniform.
John Wilner with us. All right, let's look at the rest of this conference. Do you think they fear Lincoln Riley and USC, or is it just they're aware of him, maybe annoyed by it, and let's wait and see?
I don't think they fear him, but I think that everybody in the conference recognizes that USC's got the potential to be a real problem for everybody year after year to in a way that no other team probably can, right? Just because SC's done it, right? SC's got more national championships than than every other school combined. And in the middle of the richest recruiting ground, other than, you know, Texas and Florida in the country. So I think that I don't know what anybody thinks of him personally. I think everybody respects him as a coach, as an offensive coach, and everybody respects what USC can become.
Wilner, you know, we look at Larry Scott. It was a year ago yesterday that the conference announced and Larry announced he would not be coming back. You had a great piece on everything that has changed, where are the wins, where are the losses, what's yet to be determined. Let's go for the first thing. Clear wins in the wake of Larry Scott being gone. Is the conference better off than it was 12 months ago?
I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that it's better off on a couple of fronts. One is just the internal alignment and the schools trusting and being willing to work with the conference office on important matters of policy and strategy, right? I mean, think about how college sports is changing dramatically with the playoff expansion, with name image likeness, with this new NCAA constitution, right? If you don't have the 12 schools and the conference office working together, you're not going to get anything done. And it was not going to be easy to work together because there was so much distrust at the campus level to the previous administration. ClearCroft has got everybody on the same page, and that was the first most important step. I think he also has brought, you know, a fresh set of eyes to some issues, and is willing to try some things that maybe wouldn't have been tried before. So I think that there's no doubt it's better off at a very high level, but it's going to take a while for that stuff to trickle down into actual on-the-field results and, you know, substantive policy that can improve football.
Wilner, the areas that definitely need improvement, and let's just start with short-term stuff. You know, we're talking about USC. This conference needs a contender in the playoff picture. How far away does it feel from being a contender?
I give USC two seasons to be a contender, right? I mean, we could have Utah could certainly, if Utah beats Florida opening week, or if Oregon beats Georgia opening week, either of those two teams is a contender, just the way Oregon was a contender this past season after beating Ohio State, right? Getting into the playoff is a whole different deal because you pretty much have to go 13-0 or 12-1. I'm not sure anybody's good enough to go 12-1. But we could see somebody get in the playoff next season. I don't think it's outlandish to think that Utah or Oregon might be able to do it. And then SC probably the year after. And that would certainly help because it looks like the playoff isn't going to expand to 12, maybe until the 2026 season. And that is a long time from now.
Yeah, it feels like status quo. This conference has a number of different schools in different states. There's name, image, likeness legislation that it differs from state to state. You know, and I keep thinking too about the, you know, the landscape shifting and the conference needing to be forward thinking. Is this conference as a whole well positioned in this NIL world?
Well, I mean, it's tough right now. The lack of oversight for putting NCAA basically has kind of washed its hands of the whole thing, right? So there's not much oversight. There's a lot of stuff. The cheating that used to go on only under the table is now going on under and over, right? I mean, there's things happening on the NIL front that are not supposed to be happening, but there's no rules to prevent it. I think the Pac-12 is at a little bit of a disadvantage relative to, say, the SEC, where, you know, they're pretty much willing to do whatever it takes to get talent, right? And I'm not sure that that's necessarily the same ethos in the Pac-12. So the conference could certainly benefit, I think, from a little bit of oversight. I just don't know if that's going to happen.
On the to-do list for George Kliavkov short term, what's on that list?
Well, things that are, you know, kind of outside his control a little bit. The playoff expansion is really the thing that is, you know, the football-specific issue. That is holding up the other strategic decisions they've got to make, right? They need to decide, are they going to get rid of divisions? They need to decide if they're going to play eight conference games or nine. Both of those things are dependent upon maximizing access to the playoff. But because they don't know how big the playoff's going to be or what the access policy is, they can't make decisions on those other issues. So the playoff situation is kind of holding some things up a little bit. The other deal is, you know, he's got to position the conference as best he can for the start of the media rights negotiations, which will probably be in about a year. They'll start talking to Fox, ESPN, and then the other potential bidders. And I'm sure he is doing that. But again, the playoff is going to impact that. There's only a certain amount of money out there that the networks have. If ESPN is pulling all this extra money into a 12-team playoff, there may be a little bit less for media rights for specific conferences. So everything is kind of interconnected. It's like seven-dimensional chess.
John Wilner with us. Men's basketball. How is this conference performing? Oregon making a case. I saw you posted on them. You think Oregon's got a case to make the NCAA tournament right now?
I do think they do. I think if they can avoid bad losses, I mean, the way the whole process is set up, you know, bad losses hurt you more than good wins help to a large extent. But I think Oregon is in pretty good shape right now. They got to avoid, you know, losing to the bottom third of the conference, and they certainly would be helped by winning, Arizona, beating Arizona, USC, UCLA again. But I think that they're actually in pretty good shape. Right? They don't have, you know, Houston, NCAA tournament team, right? Baylor, obviously. BYU, same thing, St. Mary. So they really don't have a bad loss except for ASU at home. So I think they're actually in better shape than you would think just based on when they have six total losses. That's not a good indicator. You got to look deeper than just the loss count.
John Wilner with us. All right, this Travis Dye situation to USC, how big a story is that within the conference to see a player at Oregon jumping over to USC?
You know, I think it's a pretty big deal. At the same time, we're going to see, you know, more of that. The way you can, you know, move from school to school without penalty at this point. But it's a pretty big deal because, I mean, you know, Dye's one of the best tailbacks in the conference. There's no doubt about that. And one contender gets helped, another contender gets hurt, right? I mean, Colorado just got Brendan Rice, USC got Brendan Rice. The receiver from Colorado was Jerry Rice's kid. He's a really good player, but it doesn't quite resonate the way it does when somebody from Oregon is going to somebody from SC. At the same time, I think it's going to become much more common either later in this offseason or in future offseasons.
Do you think USC running backs that have now watched Lincoln Riley add a Stanford running back and an Oregon running back, do you think that there's a chance USC loses some depth there with some guys who jump in the portal now and go, hey, there are fewer carries available?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've already lost a couple guys to the portal, the NFL. I mean, that was, you know, they've lost a lot of guys to the transfer portal, which was a story, except that, you know, that was not necessarily a bad thing because Riley was planning on bringing in, new blood, so to speak. They lost two tailbacks before they got Austin Jones from Stanford and Travis Dye. They lost some receivers before they got Brendan Rice, and they also got Mario Williams from Oklahoma, who's really good. I mean, he's basically restocked their skill positions, except the quarterback. And if they end up getting Caleb Williams from Oklahoma, you got to start talking about SC maybe being the favorite of the South.
John Wilner, you have a great – what are you doing right now anyway, by the way? You're not at home. What are you out doing right now? Let's humanize you.
I'm not sure your listeners could take it. I'm driving from store to store trying to find somebody to install ceramic tile in my garage.
Oh, man. What are you doing in the garage? You putting in like a little workspace or what are you doing?
No, we're just trying to create some space to get the kids out of the house.
Yes. Do it.
You know what I'm talking about there, right? You need that space.
I know. My parents used to tell me, go outside, see what's going on, and they'd lock the door behind me. That was their way of getting me out of the house. Good luck with that.
I need it.
Maybe some of our listeners in the Bay Area who do ceramic tile will know, and they'll reach out to you on Twitter, tell you what to do.
That'd be fantastic because I'm not doing very well here in terms of going store to store.
Yeah, it's hard to find people right now to do work because everybody is, you know, there's a shortage of labor. Especially in the home improvement space, everybody's busy.
Oh, I know. And plus, you know, you deal with a garage and, there's warranty issues and just a whole next level of complication compared to doing something in the house.
I love it. Wilner, thank you, my friend. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
All right, there he is. He's doing some ceramic tile. You're a ceramic tile guy and you're listening in the Bay Area. There you go. Customer number one. Good stuff from Wilner. We'll kick it around next. I want your take on what Lincoln Riley's doing at USC. And tell me this. Is it harder to be a college sports fan in this era? Is it testing you? 503-417-7575. True that did Meatloaf die today? Is that true?
Yeah.
Sad. That would Meatloaf. That song, you know, I would do anything. Mm-hmm. Can you cue that up? I would do anything. But it has like this instrumental lead-in that is like a minute or longer before the actual. So I need you to get to the song, but people love that song.
Yeah, I'm like, working on it. I got you.
Yeah. Here. Meatloaf, larger than life. Dead at the age of 74. It's official. This came out this morning, but yours truly just stumbling onto it today. Bat Out of Hell was his original big album in 1977. He followed that up in 1993 with Bat Out of Hell 2, Back into Hell. So there you have it. May you rest in peace, Meatloaf. You know what I like about him? He's got range. Because his voice is powerful. Like, he could be the voice of at Autzen Stadium or Reser Stadium. But then he goes with that more theatrical, you know?
Yeah, it's like fake opera. If he were born in
fake opera.
But if he were like 25 now, he would have never been allowed to get famous. That's what's great about Meatloaf.
Yeah, what are you saying? His look? He didn't have the look?
Yeah, absolutely.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.